Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
To the middle. Pass for Petrovic. And Rantanen got a shot away. And it bounces in! Off of Petrovic!
I mean, it doesn't seem like a big kick to me. I mean, it's an angle of the skate. But I guess by the letter of the law, it is kind of kicking.
Finally have a verdict.
After video review, the Winnipeg goalie puts the puck into his own net after a kick. And it's a good
goal. Jones hammers it. Shielded by Wall. A chance they score. It's Carter Verhaeghe on the back door. And Florida breaks the ice.
Welcome to a brand new week where the Amerks return to the ice on Wednesday to kick off their playoff series against Laval. And the Bandits are going to be home back in Bandit land to kick off the NLL Championship on Friday. It is great to have you along. Marty, there's a distinct what type of motions going into this new week?
Well, let's start with the kick, because the kick heard around the world.
Was it a kick? Was it really a kick?
Well, it was a kick because they deemed it a kick. And I think it was a kick when you propelled the puck forward, but then it went off Connor Hellebuck's stick. And the rule book is pretty specific when it comes to that. The league saw it in a different way. It ended up being the game-winning goal. And look, Connor Hellebuck was not good in the first round of this these playoffs against St. Louis. He got lucky. They won in double OT in game 7 against the Blues. All three games on the road, he had gotten pulled. Now, in the first two games of this series against Dallas, he was really good. In game 2, he got a shutout. And so, but now everybody was saying, wait until he gets on the road, we'll see. I thought he was good in the game yesterday. They lose 5-2. And the third goal, the Petrovic's goal that ended up being the game-winning goal, I don't get how the league allows that goal. They say Hellebuck propelled it into his own net. He did not get up and shoot it in his net. He did not grab it with his hand and throw it in the net. He tried to make a save. It went off of him and went in because the guy kicked it towards the net. So the rule book is pretty specific to that. It says goals should count when it hits someone's stick on either team, except the goalie's stick. It doesn't say, well, if the goalie's stick redirects it backwards, it just said if it goes off the goalie's stick, it's no goal. They went the other way. I was confused. I think they got it wrong, but you know what? It's a moot point now because they're down 2-1 in the series.
It is, and the easy way to take the onus off of that play is to just recognize there's plenty of time left and you go get it back. But it seemed like Arneal and the Jets became a little unglued with that. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong. It was a little weird because it was an 8-minute review. That was a long review. And I get it. Yeah. Like, I feel like if the league was looking at a few different things, that it hit a stick, you know, Petrovic's stick was right there. I think they went through the checkpoint. I feel like the league wanted that goal to count. And they want to keep the goals on the board. They don't want to get them off the board if they don't have to.
Right.
And then 8 minutes later, I feel like the Jets for 8 minutes were like, that's not going to count. Let's go, let's go, let's go. And then when they said it was a good goal and they dropped the puck after that, they lost their composure. They lost their game. Less than a minute later, Mikko Rantanen walks in and walks through everybody and scores the goal. And it's like, okay, now you're down 4-2. You could have just kept it with a lot of time left, as you said.
Yeah, 16 minutes left. Like, I mean,
minutes. Like, we're good. We're good. We're fine. Yeah, we don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
So it was their own wrongdoing that led to that. But it was also their own wrongdoing that, you know, allowed a goal, a power play goal in the first shot of the game. Like, that's not the way you wanted to start the game. There was a lot of wrongdoing by the Jets. But that goal shouldn't have counted. But anyway, move on.
You do. I have to say, this Hellebuck topic is making me nauseous, quite frankly. It's also reminding me of the unrelenting criticism for what ended up being no good reason against Corey Crawford and the Blackhawks.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the number of times they would just, and I could tell you who it was, but I'm not going to bore you with it. But it was just, you realize that like pucks go in. So it doesn't really matter. Like stop making something out of nothing here. And all Corey Crawford did was battle through the course of his career. And he was a winner through the course of his career. And I have nothing but respect for him. And I have a ton of it for Hellebuck too. I get it. He got blown up a few games in the first round. But I just think right now, people think it's low-hanging fruit. And it's like, it's not even there. Like, if he has a bad game, sure, point it out. But I feel like almost like accurate reporting is going by the wayside right now in evaluating someone's performance.
Yeah, and the big thing right now when you look at Connor Hellebuyck is because he's got an .848 save percentage in the playoffs, right? I mean, that is a tough one.
Edmonton's last we spoke? 6-0 Calvin Pickard was at
with
eight,
an eight
was
860 or whatever.
It might have even been lower. So like, show me the wins.
Yes, show me the wins. That's what's important. Now, the road and home split for Connor Hellebuyck in this series has been like really dramatic. He has I think it's close to a 7 goals against average in 4 road games and a save percentage that's like in the low 700. Like, that's why I think that this game 3 was a little bit more under the microscope, because it was a road game after playing well at home.
Of course, but to the point of the turning point in the game, there was really nothing wrong with the Jets' road game, but then their road game, not Hellebuck's road game, unraveled. So I feel like if you're looking for a story here, it's why can't the Jets team rein it in on the road when things start to go south? This is not a singular goaltending or player problem for this team on the road right now.
Yesterday was definitely not a Connor Hellebuyck problem. I think there has been in the St. Louis series a couple of bad goals that it, you know, sure. But again, you're right. You're a
but
team,
they're the
right?
Jets. They're, you have to overcome. One. Like, they're dynamic. They're so
you have
good.
To overcome a bad goal. Like, the Oilers have not crumbled when Calvin Pickard has given up a bad goal. 2-0 Vegas the other day. Mark Stone walks in, shoots at 5-0. Terrible goal. The Oilers came back and won, right? I mean, they've come back 6 straight games with Calvin Pickard in net to come
they
back
have.
And win.
Oh, with Pickard, yes.
With Pickard in net.
The streak could have continued the other night, but.
Well, they lost with 0.4 seconds left, and that was just a kick to the gut. But okay, but the Jets, again, it's 2-2 in the second period. They get a power play. Mikko Rantanen gets a penalty. We've talked about Mikko Rantanen, you know, the success that he's had with Dallas, and he had 13 goals where he had a point or a goal on 13 straight Dallas goals. That ended. But still, like, it was incredible. He takes a penalty. Make him pay. Make the Dallas Stars pay. Score on the power play. The Jets are 1-for-13 on the power play. They went 0-for-4 in that game yesterday. Like, maybe that's the point to that. Like, don't point to Connor Hellebuyck, who, gave up 5, but I think that wasn't so much on him. Point to other things. Change the narrative. Help your goalie out. Take ownership if you're the Jets. The Dallas Stars are a good team, though. I mean, they're a good team. So it's going to be a challenge for them, just like it's going to be a challenge for the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Florida Panthers, last 2 games, they've been good. Yesterday was a 1-0 game all the way down. I feel like Florida has gotten themselves into a rhythm now, and that has changed, being that the 2 games were in Florida. And they win 1 in OT, a couple of lucky bounces for Florida off of Morgan Riley. But that's part of the game, and it gave Florida just a little life.
True, but I think it's hard to say rhythm. Yes, they've won 2 in a row, but the game 3 is a coin flip. And yesterday, did they have more of a Panther rhythm throughout the game? Sure, but that's one game. Yes. You know, I don't think there was anything to choose from in the game on Friday night that went Florida's way. And what if it hadn't? Are we seeing yesterday's performance from the Panthers? Probably not, is my guess. But who's to say, right?
It's interesting, the matchup, Duffer. So Austin Matthews has only 2 goals in 10 playoff games this year.
Yeah.
And the 2 goals were in the first
year, right?
He hasn't been healthy. He actually missed morning skate yesterday. So they're thinking maybe he's
nursing
something.
He's had issues
all year. And he's not He wasn't close to the 69 goals he had 2 years ago. It's been affecting him, obviously. But Florida feels that Matthews is so not a threat offensively that they've changed the matchup. In the first two games in Toronto, Barkov and Reinhardt, both Selke nominated players, were against Matthews, and they lost both games. So going home and controlling the matchups, they decided to keep Barkov and Reinhardt away from Matthews, and they said to Lundell, Lissarinen, and Marchand, you guys have the Austin Matthews line, and they've been able to do a good job. So what does that do? Now Barkov gets to play against Nylander, Tavares, and Pacioretty, and neutralizing that line that was so good in the first couple of games. That was interesting to me, that you take your best two defensive players off the Matthews line because you have to defend against somebody else.
Yeah, fascinating, isn't it? I mean, just the way certain things get highlighted, but then the recognition that, you know what, beyond those things that you're talking about, other players tend to shine. And, you know, the whole idea of changing a matchup doesn't work if the non-nominated Selke candidates don't do their thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's just... Yeah. So much attention in this team sport gets put down onto 1, 2, 3, sometimes 5 if you play like a 5-man unit and really try to get that same pair up against it, right? But it is fascinating what else has to happen here.
And look, if Nylander scores on the breakaway, whatever, it changes the game because maybe it's 1-1, maybe the Leafs win, and you're like, you really should have Barkov against Matthews' line because, you know, like it didn't work against Nylander. Like it changes everything.
But it does.
Paul Maurice is a good coach and is an experienced coach, and not a lot of coaches would have taken their top two defensive players against an Austin Matthews. But he decided to roll the dice a little bit, and it worked.
Fascinating how you phrase that. Would a lot of coaches made the switch only because they were down two games? Like you're giving Maurice credit here for making a bold move, but how could anything be deemed as bold when you're going down to, when you're down 2-0 and you run the risk of like being eliminated much sooner than anticipated?
So I kind of see that conversation in the coach's office like this. Hey, I think we got to put Barkov on Pacioretty, Nylander, and Tavares. Mm-hmm. And I don't care if, you know, Matthews doesn't have the matchup. Well, yeah, coach, we're down 2-0. We should change something. Okay, good. Like, it's over, right? It's like 5 seconds. I think that I can see that conversation go that way when it comes to that. And look, is a lot on Tkachuk and Bennett and to try to do. Yeah, obviously. But Matthew Tkachuk has still not been like the player that I think we expected. And sure, he was injured too at the end of the season. Yeah. So, you know, you can't give, let's see, Tkachuk a pass and say, well, he was banged up, and not give that pass to Matthews because there's a lot of players that are banged up. So you got to give, does Austin Matthews need to produce? Absolutely. But it changes when you consider some of the injury history and you have to adjust. Talking about coach's decision, because that, as you were talking about, you know, good coaching, Paul Maurice is a good coach. Spencer Carberry is a great coach, and he's had a great season behind the bench.
Paul's won a cup and is top five all time. Maybe we should switch the...
Okay, Paul's a great
Paul
coach.
Is a great
Spencer's
coach.
A good
Spencer
coach.
Spencer is a good coach.
I'm looking at this season too, but so
this is a recency bias because I tend to pump Carberry's tires, so it's in your head more often. Yeah.
So Alexi Protas came back to the, you know, to lineup, right? Mm-hmm. They put him on the top line with Ovechkin and Strome. Ovechkin still does not have a point in 3 games against Carolina. He had 4 goals in 5 games in the first round playing with Strome and Beauvillier. If you're the coach, are you having a conversation now saying, hey, let's put Beauvillier on the top line and Protas is going to be dropped to the third or even fourth line because that's where Beauvillier is right now? That, to me, is an interesting wrinkle tonight. I wonder if at some point they'll have to go to that because they need to get Ovechkin going. They need to get Strome going. And right now, you know, it's a low-scoring series, but they need to find an edge in Washington to be able to get there. You lose, you know, 4-0, you lose 2-1. Like these are tight games and they need to figure it out.
Right. And I think while he is the greatest goal scorer in NHL history, I don't think anyone would confuse Montreal's defensive acumen with Carolina's.
With Carolina,
so,
yes.
Okay, so Ovi got a bunch of points in the first round. Yeah, it's he should have, especially when Montembeau left. Again, Rantanen didn't have anything on the table either until late in the series against Colorado. Yeah. So I don't worry about the Ovechkin pointless window that we're living in. The Capitals' strength all year beyond the chase was their depth scoring.
Yes.
Like by a gazillion. Remember, they went their turnaround in goal differential from one year to the next among playoff teams is one of the most significant gains ever in NHL history. So that didn't just happen because Ovi had a really nice year. And why is Carolina winning right now? The exact same reason. So
yes.
Washington has to offset here the Eric Robinsons, the Stankovens, the insert Carolina.
Jack Roslovic, who got inserted in the lineup and then scored a goal.
Exactly. So that's how I look at it. I guess I'm less, this is now very much just like we started the show with the Hellebuck thing. Like it's such a team performance right now. I can't dwell on one person not perhaps living up to their numbers because these sample sizes are so small. But all that being said, and you kind of hinted at it, like, I do think Washington will come back tonight because that's what they do. Like Carolina can expose you in the worst ways statistically, but like think about the one game we weren't actually televising it this year, but Carolina had been rolling. They come into Buffalo, Sabres score like three quick times, right? And it's just they're susceptible to it. I get it. Yeah. Tokarski was in net that night. Whatever. The thing is, they are, like any other team, susceptible to a counter punch. And I think Washington is more than capable of that tonight.
I think Washington is capable of that tonight. And to me, that is where they need to say, we are the top team in the Eastern Conference. And we are going to be able to have our depth and the Tom Wilson have an impact. Tom Wilson had a great impact in game two when they won 3-1 and they tied the series and it was a big game. He needs to have that impact. Connor McMichael, he needs to have that impact. I think that's where, look, Logan Thompson's been great in net. So you're looking at him and you're saying, hey, they're going toe-to-toe. Thompson and Freddie Anderson, they're going, but where is the difference? You said it. Carolina has been able to just get everybody on board and getting production from different lines, different players, the back end. I look at the Washington Capitals and I say, okay, where's your production from the blue line, right? We saw Chychrun and Carlson and all those guys have such an impact all season long. You need a little bit more of that impact now. Yeah. So that's why a lot of people are looking at, you know, these four series and thinking, oh, you know what? Like Toronto, Florida is a great series and Dallas, Winnipeg is great and Edmonton, Vegas is great. And they kind of push aside Carolina, Washington. Yeah, it doesn't have the 6-5, 7-5 like scoring at the end, but they are intense games and they're well played. And so to me, that is one that's going to sneak up on people because it is a very, very fun series to watch.
Yeah. So tonight, obviously, it continues. So too does Vegas, Edmonton. What do you think is the fallout of the stunning late last second win for Vegas against Edmonton on the heels of, you know, the McDavid goal? Like, man, oh man, it was looking like in consecutive games, Braden McNabb was going to find himself on the wrong side of it.
Yeah.
He got tripped in the overtime in game two. No call. Yep. 17 seconds later off a faceoff. Boom. Edmonton wins. This game, innocently standing off to the left of his netminder. McDavid centering pass goes off of McNabb. All of a sudden, the Oilers have tied it. They're home. They're probably going to win in overtime. And you're thinking, sheesh, McNabb maybe should have taken the night off after everybody wondered whether he was going to play or not. And then, of all things, the hero of game two and the pretty much nightly hero, you know, for the Edmonton Oilers this year, Leon Draisaitl, has the unfortunate reality of an own goal with less than a second left. It's so wild, isn't it?
It's so wild. So you got to give credit where credit is due. William Karlsson, He looked up amazing. On the clock, 10 seconds left. He chips the puck in, 15 seconds left, and he goes on the chase. Mm-hmm. Like, Vegas was changing behind. And a lot of people often say, all right, 10 seconds left in the period. Why are you changing? Well, you know what? Yep. This is the reason why. I think the Sabres got caught with too many men on the ice this year with 10 seconds left in the period. And yeah. we're like, why are they changing? It's 10 yep. seconds left. Well, Vegas changed, but Carlson stayed on and forechecked. And then when he got the puck back and it went up to Riley Smith, Riley Smith was just off the bench. Nobody in Edmonton realized, but they're like, where is he coming from? And then you got two guys trying to lay down to make a block. Why? Because they know there's 5 seconds left. We got to take away the shot. We don't want him to shoot the puck. Time is going to run out. Stuart Skinner is like, I'm going to challenge because I don't want him to take the shot. Time's going to run out, which actually worked. If it wasn't for Draisaitl thinking that puck may go in the net and he gets his stick there. So it was unfortunate for the Oilers, but you got to give credit to William Karlsson and the Vegas Golden Knights who made a change, jumped on the ice, went hard to the net, got the puck, and it's in. Now, your original question, how does that affect this? I mean, you go down 3-0 if you're the Vegas Golden Knights and you have game 4 in Edmonton. It's a really, 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 really steep hill to climb back out. So not only are you buying in a little bit of belief now if you're the Vegas Golden Knights, but also Stuart Skinner is in net because Calvin Pickard got hurt. Not that Stuart Skinner played bad, but he actually played like Calvin Pickard. But the difference is the Oilers were winning with Calvin Pickard, and Stuart Skinner keeps losing. He's 0-3, where Pickard is 6-0, but the numbers are kind of similar. So
yeah.
I think this is probably a question mark. Like, hey, Stuart Skinner, can he get a win? Can he win a game? Like, that may be a, you know, everything seems to be going against him. The stars are aligned for the teams to beat him. That's almost what it felt like.
Aiden Hill, of course, isn't Aiden Hill from 2023
he's not good.
Right now either. But I couldn't help but notice, you know, some of the, you know, the smiles, the smirks under the mask as the game went on, specifically after they had dug themselves out of the 0-2 hole early in the mm-hmm. game, and thinking, he looks like he hasn't, you know, lost any faith. He looks like he hasn't, you know, questioned himself, which is not surprising. I mean, his career path prior to winning the cup would say he believed in himself the yep. whole time. I'm wondering now, because we're still not talking about the previous form of Aiden Hill, and we're talking about two Oilers netminders, does the nature of this series in any way make it easier for the goaltenders to go into these games and think, you know what? Like, none of this matters. Nobody's needed. You know what I mean? Do you know yeah. what I'm getting at here? Like, because you weren't throwing all the bouquets at Pickard when he was winning, and Hill certainly wasn't deserving of, you know, dirty water in in defeat. He just wasn't, he wasn't as good as he had been, right? So I don't know. I just wonder if it's kind of like you go into it knowing that there's going to be, based on the star power, there's probably going to be a lot of this chaos throughout the game. Like,
yeah, there's going to be a ton of chaos. And if you're the goalie, you're just like, okay, I just got to like make sure that if we get victimized by some chaos, that I don't let it become 2 or 3. Like, and yeah. I think that's what it is. Now, Mike McKenna, who was an analyst, he's not doing any more work. He was doing Vegas analysts or whatever. He always would tell me that watch Aiden Hill, FOB. And I would be like, what's FOB? Falls on
Fall
back.
Boy?
Fall, yeah, fallout boy. Falls on back. The amount of time that Aiden Hill would be falling on his back, like he's so big that I don't think he had the core strength to hold himself forward. He was always falling back. Well, that has been the issue. Watch how many times Aiden Hill is laying on his back in the crease now. Like, he's always off balance, and that was the one thing. Every time I see him doing that, I think of Mike McKenna telling me, FOB, that's Aiden Hill right there. And I'm like, what does that mean? Falls on back. Like, and yeah, or it could be other things, but yes, falls on back.
Well, that's a tremendous segue, because next segment we're going to talk about the Sabres' new director of performance, Brian Gallivan. So core strength, all the rest of it that goes into a,
We are. We're going to talk about that.
I have an angle with you, yes, that I would like to pursue. So for those that didn't know, that did happen. The Sabres have a new director of performance, and we may well go down that path. Now, There is also hockey going on at the Worlds right now. We want you to celebrate Tage Thompson, who's representing Team USA, of course, at the Worlds. And you can sign up for a half or a full season of Sabre Ticket membership right now. Become a member to get an exclusive Tage Thompson USA t-shirt. Visit sabres.com/TNT today. The stronger of the two, Marty Baron, reflects on his conditioning throughout his career when we come back.
Thanks.